Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This
is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I am your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today on episode 109, with about a month to go for retina fellows graduating, Dr. Garv Shah and I will discuss what to do in the next month to prepare for life in the real world. Shah, it's Jay Schreather. How are you?
Oh, hey Jay, it's Garv. What's up?
Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now privileged to be joined by Dr. Garv Shah. Dr. Shah is carries many roles, but he's here. One of his primary roles is program director of the Retina Fellowship at the Retina Institute in St. Louis, Missouri, where he is a partner. And he's here to talk about with me what advice we have for both residents and fellows who are graduating the next month to achieve in their last month before graduation. Dr. Shah, good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
So we're going to start first. We'll spend a little less time, not to neglect them, but because we're going to focus mostly on the fellows. But let's talk about the residents, first of all. So if you had fellows who are incoming to your program who have a month till graduation, obviously things such as credentialing, making sure everything's set up for where they're going to live when they move to their fellowship city. But what sort of advice would you give someone who has a month until they graduate residency in terms of preparing for the retina fellowship?
I think that's a good question. As we all know, preparation is the key to success in life for a lot of things, for everything in life. It's easy to do with the senior slide or, as people do sometimes, but I think this is a time to kind of ramp up and take care of your personal things, but at the same time, try to figure out in terms of, are you going to be starting in a medical rotation, surgical rotation during your fellowship? And try to sort of, obviously you've got good retina knowledge, but try to learn some basic things about, let's say if it's surgery, just about, look at some videos, look at some techniques, certainly in some of the retina atlases, in terms of, how does one start a vitrectomy, what are some of the things to be careful about in terms of, approaching surgical retina and what the goals are. The specifics you're going to get, obviously, in fellowship, but really try to figure out about goals for some of the basic things that we do in terms of macular work, retinal detachment, and diabetes. So try to have, I know it's sort of tough that last month, lots of stuff going on, graduation, finishing our projects, and so on and so forth, but it is important to sort of have a basic understanding if you've not had that in residency programs, because there are some residency programs where if there's a lot of fellows, then sometimes the residents don't get as much surgery. So I think really from that viewpoint, try to figure that out. Talk to fellows who were there previously, what they did in terms of when they started. And as far as, medical retina, certainly get familiar with the different OCT machines an institution has, whether they have OCT angiography, try to learn some things about new technology that you may not have at your own institution. So I would kind of find out what kind of equipment do these people have and how you can kind of at least learn the basics about the equipment, because it's one thing to interpret stuff, but if you don't even know what equipment it is, that's a problem.
Right. That's a great point. I mean, do you have any specific, I get asked a ton by people, what specifically should I be reading, or what book do you recommend? And I think it's a hard question to answer because everyone learns from different resources and there's an abundance of resources out there. I personally think that things such as, textbooks are good, but there's even the non-peer-reviewed journal articles like in Retina Today, Retinal Physician, things that are easier to digest may be useful when you're finishing residency.
Right.
If you were going to talk about surgical textbooks, do you have any personal preference for people? Or do you just tell them, look, just go to iTube or go online? Do you have any textbook in particular you think that is really good at summarizing things for a resident?
Yeah, I think now there's a lot of resources, and you're correct, everybody learns differently. What I think I would do is probably use a combination of textbooks. There's Ryan, there's Yanoff and Duker. I think those are really kind of two great textbooks, and they obviously have online resources. You can get the online edition. I would read those in conjunction with looking at videos. Okay, the ASRS has a nice series of some readings that they have for fellows. So that's another nice resource that can sort of start with some basic stuff. And I think it's, if you have a combination, you know, we all kind of think in a visual standpoint. So if you have a combination of reading and videos, that would be ideal. And one of the things that we do a course called Jumpstart Retina for fellows, for residents who are, which is coming up, who are now going into retina fellowships. So it is important to, again, read and get as much information as possible. But also, I think now, Jay, videos have made a huge difference, especially for surgical retina. And it's easy to Google it on so many different websites.
Right. And again, I mentioned in passing at the beginning, but we can't gloss over. It is also super important to have the rest of your life figured out when you're moving to fellowship. Meaning, I mean, I think we all expect when new fellows come in, there may be an adjustment period in terms of where they're living or you know, is still moving things or bringing their car or, you know, but you want to make sure that everything is as close to being ready by start as possible so you can focus, you know, on learning and seeing patients.
Well, one other suggestion I can also make, try to find out what kind of vitrectomy systems they have. And if you're not familiar with that system, have never seen it, have never experienced it, I would certainly spend time to get as much information from the, you know, the company's websites about this. See if you can get a hold of the representative. They can get you information. But you want to kind of start in an OR. Let's say you've only in residency used one machine and now they have another different machine. You need to at least know some parameters or something about the machine, at least in some relative form, so you don't appear to be lost. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you want to get in the driver's seat, but don't even know what car you're driving.
Right, right. And we both know Jim Vander at Wills, and he used to say something interesting I thought was useful. He said he doesn't expect an incoming fellow to know necessarily all the nuances of the vitrectomy pedal. But he said, if you expect to operate, you should at least understand how the microscope pedal works. Or if very early in your fellowship, if you have time, go by the OR once the cases are done and just get a handle of how to move the microscope pedal and using the zoom and the focus buttons. Because those are things that you can apply even as a resident and are really crucially important to being a good retinal surgeon.
Well, and I think the other thing that I see one of the biggest issues fellows have, to be honest with you, is we can teach them surgery, and we've been very lucky. We have great fellows who do well. But the thing they all struggle with, and this is inherent, is suture tying. Inherent problem, okay? So this is tying simple sutures sometimes because, you know, gone are the days of cataract surgery where you have lots of experience tying sutures. But I find the thing that fellows struggle most with when they first begin is very just simple suture tying, closing conjunctiva, sometimes with buckles. So these are things that I see year in and year out that it's sometimes it's not the intraocular part, it's really the extraocular part sometimes.
Right. Well, let's switch gears and talk about fellows. So graduating fellows is a lot. Sometimes a lot more to take in. They may have more time off before they start their job, but really the last month of fellowship, I think a lot of reality starts to kick in that there's a lot of real world stuff to learn and still a lot of maybe surgical or medical retina things to reinforce. So what kind of advice do you give your own fellows with a month left in fellowship to focus on maybe both clinically as well as other things that may be useful going into their practices?
Well, obviously you have to make sure all the logistics are set with your practice, your tail insurance, you know, your different types of insurance coverages, make sure those are all set. What I typically tell the fellows at this time is try, whenever you're in the OR, try to make sure you write down what your favorite instruments that you like that you've been working with people, right? You should have done this 2 months ago. After you've gotten a job, I usually tell them back in January of their second year, as got 6 months left, make a note of every little instrument that you like that maybe the practice you have doesn't have it. Keep a track of it and tell the practice that if possible, I would like to have this particular forceps or this particular laser, if possible. You don't want to be demanding, but certainly if there's an option, practices will make an effort to make sure you're comfortable with. So first of all, make sure you have the equipment that you need. Second, you know, make sure that you have a good understanding in terms of coding, okay? Mm-hmm. Spend a little time if you don't know about modifiers. You know, how do you code? Hopefully, you're not learning that in your last month. You should have been learning that throughout the entire process. But know a little bit about coding and the billing process, the pre-authorization process for drugs, expensive drugs, because this will come back and haunt you. So you need to pay attention to the business side of retina, because this will make a difference in how you function in a practice. Then see what your attendings have been doing the last 2 years, but make sure, obviously, pay special attention. How do they run their offices in terms of what are little things that they do that make their life a little bit easier? You know, imagine if you were them. How do you want to have your offices scheduled? Because some practices will give you some leeway in terms of scheduling patients and how you want your post-ops at a certain time. Because when things are efficient, they run, they don't just happen for a reason. People plan these things. So I think, Jay, it's important to pay attention to the details of the intricacies of running an office, running a practice, and doing things in the operating room. You know, all of the people who get trained by this time, they all have the mechanical skills. But now, you know, what are things you can do in terms of referring doctors? You know, you go to a new area, can you already set up some time or dinners or lunches or whatever you want to do to meet the referring doctor? Get a referring doctor list, okay, from the practice. And, you know, you've got some time to try to set up these things in advance. So I would highly recommend that. And also, if you have a chance, go to the practice, because you probably haven't visited them after you interviewed, and then kind of take a second look, right, of, oh, this is interesting. You know, this is great. I use this here, and if possible, can I get this? But again, don't be demanding. You know, use what they have, but slowly try to implement things that you feel comfortable. If they're reasonable, most practices will absolutely allow you to do that.
Those are all great points. And regarding instrumentation, I think taking pictures is super useful, you know, to take pictures of the instruments you like, and just so you have the model numbers and serial numbers. If wherever you're going to be operating doesn't stock it, they'll usually order it and accommodate it. You don't want to be too demanding, but if there's something you really like you said, you should ask for it. I thought also something is just what's in the trays. I think that is something we just assume that, for example, this tray will have tires, or this tray will have a cyclodialysis spatula. And that was something that, it seems very simple, but every place has different instruments in their basic retina trays. And so what you want in the trays that you're going to be using and what's going to be available to you may also determine, you know, maybe if you know you're not going to have something available in practice, maybe you want to practice an alternative method that will be available to you in the last month of fellowship. And the advice about coding and practice, how offices run, is very, very important, I think. One of the things one of my attendings told me, you know, Wills was a little different because we spend most of the second year in the operating room, not in the clinic. They said, you know, on those days you finish the OR early, you know, swing back to clinic and just spend an hour or two, you know, each day, not only getting a handle of the medical retina things that you may have forgotten, you know, what kind of intervals are you going to use for your treat and extend macular degeneration patients, but how does the office run? Like you said, these are the unconscious things when you're a fellow in attending clinic. If you're not consciously trying to pay attention, you don't realize how many things are set up in a way to make the patient experience more streamlined and efficient. And
I think, Jay, one thing I would do, and speaking of that, one thing I would do is when you you know, the drugs are a big issue in our life, right? Expensive drugs are a huge issue. If you have expensive drugs, you need to figure out, what does a PAN form mean? You know, what if I have a patient from a nursing home and they can't we can't collect for some of the deductibles that are associated with these expensive drugs, the branded drugs? You need to know exactly how is the paperwork done from the start to the finish, because if you're a person in a practice that is running where you're going and they're not doing sometimes things correctly, or maybe it's different, you just need to know, because this will affect your bottom line at some point.
Mm-hmm. That's
really what happens with fellows is sometimes people are oblivious because it's not affecting their bottom line.
Okay? Right.
But all of a sudden you'll do six branded drugs, and guess what? The PAN form wasn't signed, or that wasn't done. Well, number one, that's not good. Somebody's going to lose money, whether it's you personally or the practice or whatever that might be. So you need to have a good handle from the start to the process, like, oh, okay, that this is a
you know, Medicare HMO, well, a PAM form doesn't do us any good on that patient, or it might be a nursing home patient. So you need to have, you know, spend a little bit of time with people who do the referral process. Okay, it's critical because this is quite often people have no idea what goes on. You know, what happens in fellowship, you're getting the final product, right? You never see the whole production line.
Right. And you mentioned coding and modifiers. That's another thing. It's again, the difference between just showing up to your job and just showing up to work and expecting to just see patients and things to just work out. And then what you don't want to happen is to find out either in your bottom line 3 or 6 months later or a year later that you've made mistakes, or you get called by the practice partners because you're not doing things that necessarily are important for the financial bottom line for the practice. So the drugs and also understanding how to code, using those modifiers appropriately, reviewing them before you leave your practice.
Yes.
And then you talked about...
One more thing, Jay. I think it's also important, as and this would sort of be somewhere in your contract, but in order to get vested for a 401k plan or pension profit sharing plan, you need to work so many hours, okay? So you need to have so many hours in your first year to be qualifying, because that plan... that there's certain federal regulations. So you want to make sure you haven't taken so much time off between the time you started where you ended to where you started. Because if not, you're going to miss those 6 months of money being given to the pension profit sharing plan. It's a really important point. If you start in October, you're not going to get that money. Mm-hmm. But if you start in some reasonable time in August, September, and you can work out something with a practice where, you know, you have to have so many hours put in order for them to set aside the money. And remember, that money is going to go tax-free for so many years. So it becomes, it's a multiplier.
Right. And this may also be, for most of our fellows, the first year they're paying up in a significant bracket of a progressive system, right? Because they're going from a fellow salary for the previous year to this year when they're graduating. Half the year is going to be a fellow salary, but at least... you know, three, four, five months are going to be an attending salary. They're going to see a huge bump in their tax brackets. And so the more you can kind of defer, if you're eligible for that, the more you're going to feel those benefits, especially in the first year of being in that higher tax bracket.
The other thing I would also recommend for us, our finances, take $5,000 and spend it on yourself or your spouse or family, whatever it is, and take it in cash. And between your vacation time, between the time you start and time you start your practice, there's nothing like spending money in cash. So you've earned it. You've done all the things. So this is a time to enjoy. So I would highly recommend that.
That's a great point. And then you mentioned early on, it's not just about instrumentation, but kind of building your preferences for what you're going to do for different types of surgery. You said you like your fellows to kind of develop that. You're in a practice where they operate with several different attendings, and we all kind of become an amalgamation of all the different attendings that we've worked with. We built kind of our own brand, what to say. Any advice, you know, one thing I've heard, and we spoke about this in a different group, but advice for fellows in their first year. So when they're thinking ahead for the first year in terms of, I've heard that you should be a little more conservative, for example, when you're trying to build a referring base. Maybe don't take that 20-25 pucker to the OR right away. And maybe if you have a retinal detachment and you're thinking about a buccal, I know you're someone who says if you're thinking about a buccal, you do it. But maybe you think a little harder about being a little more conservative with either adding a buccal or your tamponade the first year. How important do you think that is to build the referring base and kind of build some respect within your community?
So I think that, first of all, you should do, Jay, whatever you feel comfortable with, okay? You should not do something that someone suggests to you. Okay. And this, the typical scenario is a retinal detachment that somebody else sees, right? We all know that this happens all the time. And we simply put down repair retinal detachment. From, you can do a Linkoff balloon to laser demarcation to retinal to scleral buccal vitrectomy or primary vitrectomy, whatever you think is the best approach for you. But I think that where people get in trouble is when they do things that, the partner says you should do this, you should do that. And they don't feel comfortable doing that. So my approach in your first year or any time, really, do what you're trained to do. If you think a buccal vitrectomy in your hands is the best procedure, that's what I would do. If you think a buccal is the best procedure in your hands, that's what I would do. So I would say the general rule in any time, forget the first year or your 20th year, do what's best in your hands, not because somebody tells you at a meeting that that's the way to go, because famous people are often wrong.
That's really, really good advice. Final thing in terms of preparing for leaving fellowship, you talked about how, you know, one of the things you mentioned at VidBuckle, for example, you said, if you don't manage your schedule learns to dictate you and dictate your life. And you don't want, again, to be demanding when you start. But kind of knowing the ins and outs of what you're going to be doing or setting up your schedule. One of the piece of advice I got was, like you said, go to the office before you start. This may be after graduation, but right before you start. But not only that, go to the OR and kind of, you don't want the first day you operate to be the first time you're at an office or in an ASC or hospital. But what about in terms of, what advice do you give new fellows or new attendings for their schedules when they're managing them? Obviously, it depends on their personal preference, but some general pieces of advice to make their schedule
efficient. Absolutely. You don't want the schedule to control you. You need to control the schedule. So even after 22 years, I still manage my own schedule, meaning I have schedules that do this, but I specifically tell them there's certain rules. You know, I can't have a new patient after a certain time. I want to start at a certain time. I want my post-ops at a certain time. So you figure out what works for you as long as it's within reason. You know, I like to start the offices early, right? So I might start, I typically start at 7:30. I like to have the offices end a little bit late, end a little bit earlier. And sometimes on my call days, I end up a little bit earlier so that I have time, if need be, to do a case on call or late afternoon. You know, there are times when, you know, you can plan these things. So the point is, as long as it's reasonable, you should plan and do it in a way that suits, obviously, your practice, but also has to suit you and your style. So, you know, some people like to start their offices later. They don't like to get up in the morning. Some people are early risers. So do what suits you as long as it's within the confines of your practice environment. You know, none of us are that special, but if you can work within the practice's environment and talk to the person in the practice saying, hey, you know what, on Wednesdays, I would really like to start early if possible and end a little bit earlier because I'm typically on call on Wednesdays, and if need be, I could do some cases in the afternoon, whatever that might be, okay? So I think you can control the schedule. To this day, I always tell patients what day they're going to have surgery when I talk with the schedule saying, okay, I have, you know, on my half days, I want these types of cases and this person and that person. So I kind of know that on one day, on a half day, I don't have five fraction detachments, right? Because the schedulers don't know that, but you do. So you need to be very cognizant. You know, as I expect my patients to be on time, you know, I need to be on time. So one of my pet peeves is I don't like to keep people waiting. People should be in and out of your office within 45 minutes to an hour, because people care about how long do you wait and where do they park, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Those are both great pieces of advice. Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm just going to ask you, and I'm going to give my last piece, any last bits of advice for the graduating fellow starting. My last piece of advice would be, if there's meetings you've attended, as a fellow, you probably are not used to collecting your CME, your continuing medical education credits. But if there's something that you've attended in 2018, I would recommend you look into trying to get in those certificates, because you can still apply them. And those will become critical once you go into practice. You may not be going to as many meetings your first year out. You may not be getting as much CME because you're not going to grand rounds all the time at your academic institution or having your regular conferences. So it's nice to have that CME credit as kind of a base so that you're not hunting for CME credit near your deadlines when you have to go up for a relicensure certification. But
I think that's a really good point. And also, I realize you may not be going to meetings as much, but I do think you should at least try to potentially go to one meeting in your first year and try to have an understanding with your partners saying, you know what, let me know which meetings you guys are not going to. And if, you know, put it that way, so then they feel like you're looking good for the practice or good for the institution, that I'd like to, if you're not going, I would like to go if possible. Because if you don't keep up with doing the things such as what you're doing and, you know, your, some of your colleagues who have graduated, if you don't do that the first few years, let me just tell you, over time, it never happens again. Right. People are then just out there, but, you know, they lose their zest for contributions. So you have to keep that going there's a lot of people who are really good, really talented, but then just kind of shut it off. And for whatever reasons that might be, so you don't want to fall into that trap.
Well, Dr. Shah, thank you so much for joining us this morning and for all the great advice. And again, 1 month to graduation. Congratulations to everyone who is finishing up their fellowship and residency, as we mentioned at the beginning. And hopefully we'll have you back here soon, Dr. Shah.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. And like I said, good luck to all the people starting their practice. It's an exciting time. It's always a little apprehensive. But, you know, you've made it this far. So over time and with some experience, you guys will all do fine.
All right. Have a great morning. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RATINAPodcast.com. All 109 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. You'll also find our blog, Equal Round and Reactive Lessons from Our Pupils. Also on the website, you can sign up for our mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes. At the bottom are links to subscribe in the iTunes Store as well as Google Play. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the podcast section of the iTunes Store and Google Play. We're on Twitter at RetinaPodcast. And to contact us, click on the contact us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We really love getting feedback on things we can do better and things we're already doing well. And we appreciate anyone who subscribes via the Apple Podcast app or Google Play to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to Dr. Gaurav Shah for his advice and for joining me today. Thanks to Louis Kai, Mike Benicasa, and Angela Chang for producing this episode. Thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schrader, signing off.
Good feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.